And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND, staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. My voice is a little bit better today than it was yesterday, but offering you today, folks, an oasis of peace in the midst of the storm. If you are watching these pictures of what's going on in cities like Chicago and other places around the country, you could become very discouraged. I mean, really, very discouraged. But let me encourage you in the Lord. There is a peace that passes all understanding. And even in the midst of all of that, you can still have it. This peace we have, the world didn't give it. Well, therefore, the world can't take it away, right? And I know this stuff is ugly. Oh, my goodness, it's ugly. But, you know, there is a river, the streams whereof make glad the city of God. God is in the midst of her. And that right early, God will bless her at the break of dawn. See, I believe there's a dawn coming. I really believe that all of this terrible stuff we see going on is the prelude to a tremendous outbreak of God's spirit and power. I believe God is being set up to show up and show himself strong on behalf of those whose hearts are loyal to him. I mean that, folks. I'm serious about that. You know, there's that old saying, maybe somewhat cliche, it's always darkest before the dawn. I think it bears some repeating here, that this situation just looks so out of control. And, you know, God is the one who reminds us when it's too hard for us, it's just right for him. Just right for him. So be encouraged, folks. As a matter of fact, I would add this. On, shall we say, a more mundane note, a more political note even, if you will, to be explicit about it. If you want to know what the left has in mind for our country, if you want to understand the plans that they have, the dark vision that they have for America, just look at what they have wrought in cities across the country. That's their vision. Did you all ever see the first Zorro with Antonio Banderas, The Mask of Zorro? I used to love Zorro when I was a kid. I still go for that kind of stuff. But if you didn't see that, there's a scene in the movie in which the villain, Don Alessandro, something like that. And he is plotting to take over California. And he's going to do it with this gold that he has hidden from his nemesis in Mexico, who threatens, who was that at that point? I think they used the historical figure, but who threatens basically to take California, but he's going to buy it from him with this gold. But the way he's mining the gold is he's capturing slaves to mine the gold, okay? And he's capturing children and priests and just anybody he can get to. And so finally, when the Antonio Banderas figure gets into Don Alessandro's good graces and he takes him to see the mine, he goes. And when he sees it, what he sees is absolute horror. And people in rags, dirty, filthy, dragging buckets of who knows what up the ladders of the mine and being kept in cages until it's time for them to work and being half starved. And the Antonio Bandero's character sees this. Of course, he doesn't know that this is really Zorro because, you know, he's the, of course, anybody should have been able to identify him as Zorro, but that's the willing suspension of disbelief for a movie, right? And so Antonio Banderas, the Zorro character, he does not know what Zorro says to him. So this is what you have in mind for California. And the Don looks at him and says, "This is my vision, yes." And it's so sinister when he says it, "This is my vision, yes." And folks, you can hear Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Bill de Blasio, and all of these communists, frankly, looking at the chaos that is happening in the streets and saying, "This is our vision. Yes, yes, this is our vision. One of chaos, one of anarchy, one of destruction, one that will ultimately give us absolute power over people, because then we can step in and we can use the thugs." You know, Mao Zedong used the Red Guard, which was a bunch of young people, to terrorize the Chinese into submission to the Cultural Revolution. Anybody who didn't seem enthusiastic, they beat them, they killed them, they tortured them, they did anything they wanted to do to get everybody in line. And I really do not believe I'm exaggerating when I say this is the dystopian vision that these people have for our country. They say, well, Bishop, why would you say something that ugly about them? Do you hear them protesting? Do you hear any hue and cry against the violence, against the murder, against the mayhem? Have you heard any of them come on television teary-eyed about the deaths of all these young children, about the deaths of police officers, about the degree to which people who have committed vicious crimes are turned right back out in the street to go kill someone else or hurt someone else? Have you heard any of that from them? No. So you can't but conclude that they like it. Just like Don Alessandro, "Yes, this is my vision." But thank God, folks, that right now there is a Zorro in town. <You don't. laughs> Forgive the movie analogy, but there was a Zorro in town. And I'm not thinking of Jesus in this particular case, like I said, to make a more political point, a more mundane point. And frankly, in my view, his name is Donald Trump. And that's why they want to kill him. And by the way, in the movie, that was Don Alessandro's whole motivation. We must find and kill Zorro. We must kill Zorro. Zorro is in the way of our fulfilling this vision we have of enslaving all of California. Well, I think these folks would love to enslave all of America if they could. And we're witnessing exactly what they have in mind to bring that about. And Bill de Blasio is all up in arms because somebody put up a cartoon, a character of him with a Che Guevara shirt on, holding, what was he holding? I think he was holding the head of Donald Trump, I think. Forgive me for that. No, he was holding up the head of Lady Liberty from the Statue of Liberty in the cartoon. I mean, it was a depiction, obviously. Oh, he got worked up about that. Oh! But I think that that's an accurate picture of exactly where somebody like de Blasio, Pelosi, Schumer, that's exactly where they want to take us. And you know what? We've got news for them, folks. We're not going. Back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
How should the academic world respond when a research study published in a peer-reviewed journal comes to a conclusion that you wouldn't expect? In the past, some might challenge the methodology or even consider doing a second study to see if the conclusions could be replicated. The latest tactic is to bring pressure on the researchers and their universities so they will disavow their own study. That is what happened to professors at Michigan State University and the University of Maryland who studied police shootings. They analyzed 917 fatal police shootings of civilians to test whether the race of the officer or the civilian predicted fatal police shootings. Neither did. Their study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences found that once race-specific rates of violent crime were taken into account, they found no disparities based on race. Heather McDonald cited the study in her congressional testimony and also referred to this article in some of her writings. Even though this was challenged by other professors, the two professors in their original study concluded that even under the proposed study design, there was no significant evidence of anti-black disparity in the likelihood of being fatally shot by police. Given the current climate, you can imagine the amount of pressure they have been under. Earlier this month, the authors decided to retract their paper under the excuse that its conclusions had been misused. They specifically mentioned op-eds by Heather McDonald. This retraction illustrates what's wrong with the academic world. No longer is the focus on finding the truth. Political consensus is already driving much of the research done in this country. Researchers will likely suppress any results that challenge the latest liberal progressive narrative. Truth will be set aside. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For a free copy of Kirby's booklet, A Biblical View on Socialism, go to viewpoints.info/socialism. That's viewpoints.info/socialism. A Moment of Truth with Gary Bryden of the Association of Independent Methodists.
Marriage vows are not multiple choice. It's not either richer or poor, it's both. It's not in sickness or in health, it's both. It's not either for better or worse, it's both. It's consciously and intentionally forsaking all others and being faithful to that one you have married for life. There's a special bond between a man and a woman who are married to each other, going through life, working through hardships, tragedies together, along with joys and happy times. There are plenty who regret calling it quits, but very, very few who regret going through it all together until the end of life. Why not truly forsake all others and stick with one for life?
The Association of Independent Methodists, like-minded congregations doing together what can't be done separately. Visit aim2020.com.
Brian Fisher here. A majority of white Americans believe America is racist. Are they right? Trump excluded illegal aliens from being counted for representation in Congress. Is he right? People who weren't even tested are being told they have coronavirus, and Margaret Sanger's name is removed from the New York abortion clinic that she founded. Next on Focal Point.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
And we're back. I'm going to start trying to take your calls early. And the number, of course, hold on, I'm just getting settled here in my, by the way, I'm no longer in Miami. I'm back in Virginia. The number is 888-589-8840 for you all to call in. Now, de Blasio got very upset about this meme that was put out depicting him as holding Lady Liberty's head, her bloody head, by the way. And he sent out, he sent out as a result a tweet. And, sometimes I just wonder about these people. I really do. I really do. I vacillate between they're being just insane, just mentally ill, and they're being just supremely evil. And I guess that's really what Marxism and socialism and communism ultimately do to the minds of people. Because think about what they made people do during the revolutions, during the Bolsheviks, during the Chinese Revolution, when the communist parties took over. I mean, they turned people into mass murderers because they killed anybody who got in the way. Now, were they just insane or just supremely evil? Maybe supreme evil is a kind of mental illness, but not the kind that absolves you of responsibility, but just a way of saying that you have completely left the realm of normality and you are off into another realm that can only be described as a kind of illness. But it's an illness of your choosing. It's not something that gives you an excuse for what you're doing. You choose to be ill. You choose to be evil. But here's what de Blasio tweeted, and basically was tweeting it to Donald Trump. I think President Trump or others have said something about his painting Black Lives Matter on the streets, which was, again, another stupid move by Bill de Blasio. But he says this, here's what you don't understand. Black people built Fifth Avenue and so much of this nation. Your luxury came from their labor, for which they have never been justly compensated. We are honoring them. The fact that you see it as denigrating your street is the definition of racism. Now, folks, I don't even know where to begin with that. I really don't. For a man to be mayor who is that deeply and profoundly confused and off and who hates his country that much, first of all, let's just get the facts straight. Unless he knows something I don't know, black people didn't build Fifth Avenue, A. And B, this myth that somehow this nation was built on the back of slavery is a lie. This is a complex, gargantuan nation of 230 million people with the largest economy in the history of mankind. Did slavery at points in our history contribute to the growth of its economy? Of course it did, because it made a cheap form of labor available, particularly in the South, which was an agrarian economy, of course. But in the meantime, the North was developing along industrial lines. And there weren't that many black people in the North, and slavery had ended in the North long before that began to happen. And a lot of that agrarian activity in the South, of course, was feeding overseas markets, not just the North. So certainly slavery played a role in the economy, particularly in the South. But every time I hear this, you know, this country was built on slavery. That's just a lie. Because the real economy of America didn't take off. I mean, the powerful economy that now bestrides the known world did not take off until slavery was over. So, I mean, what all the technology, all the inventions, all the patents, all the breakthroughs that have come in this country have come as a result of slavery. I mean, it's preposterous. It's ridiculous. And I'm in no way trying to diminish the degree to which the South relied on slavery for its labor force. In fact, you all know probably that West Virginia broke away in part because the West Virginians felt that slavery interfered with the ability to have gainful employment, because what do you need to hire people for when you've got cheap slave labor? And that was part of the impetus for West Virginia, which was once part of Virginia, breaking off and becoming a separate state. So I'm not trying to diminish or deny that slavery had an economic part in the growth of this country, particularly, again, in the growth and development of the South. Because, of course, it was a cheap form of labor. It wasn't cost less. It did cost something, but it didn't cost nearly as much as market rates paid for workers doing that same work. And that's why the system held for so long, obviously, because it was economically convenient. But this country was built by everybody. Now, let's just get that straight, shall we? This nation was built by Irish and Italians and Jews and Eastern Europeans and even Asians coming over, working on the railroad. This country was built by lots of people from lots of different places. We all have a share in the growth and the development of this company, of this country. And I just get tired of these race-baiting demagogues like Bill de Blasio trying to make every American feel like everything we've got because of slavery. It's a lie out of the pit of hell. And it gives black folks, it is designed to give black folks some sense of entitlement and to give all white people some sense of guilt. And it's just a lie. How in the world they voted for this man in New York? I don't understand it. I really don't. Because this man is gone. Now, of course, I realize he's not just espousing anything different than the usual far left pablum that you hear from these people. But they're not mayors of the largest city in the country. He is. And he ought not be. I mean, he needs to go. He really does need to go. As far as I'm concerned, this man is a demagogue. He's really just a demagogue who just needs to go. And they're blaming President Trump for the violence that's erupted in their cities. Well, what do you expect, dum-dum, when you dismantle the police, when you close down one of the most effective means of getting guns off the street and limiting the activity of gangs, the plainclothes anti-crime units, you got rid of those. When you tell the police that they're bad and you create a revolving door for criminals so that nobody goes to jail anymore, everybody's let out on bail, pretty much. And then it's the president's fault that violence is spiking in New York, in Chicago, and other cities across the country? I mean, you see, this is why I vacillate between is it mental illness or evil, because even evil people can think, can't they? Because to believe the stuff that they espouse is just rank stupidity. It's a denial of logic and facts and information that is obvious and available to us all. But I guess if they're evil, then they might even know the facts and still, then they would know the facts and still lie. The truth and facts simply do not matter. Mentally ill people don't understand the truth of facts because they're disconnected from reality. Evil people know the facts and know the truth and don't care. And so they lie in order to get what they want. It's probably something of a mixed bag. It really is probably something of a mixed bag, but I never cease to be flabbergasted. So the president is going to send 100 troops to Chicago, 100, not troops, sorry, folks. The president is going to send 100 federal agents to Chicago to help there. And of course, the mayors of these cities are squealing like hit dogs over the president saying he's going to send federal help in. They'd rather see their people dying in the streets. They'd rather see children dying. They'd rather see their streets in chaos than accept the fact that the president of the United States can be of help to them. And here again, they hold themselves out as compassionate. That's not compassion, folks. That's a compulsive quest for power above all else. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Milton, John Milton's poem, Paradise Lost, in which he quotes Satan or puts in the mouth of Satan, and you all have probably heard this, but that's the poem it comes from. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. I'm serious. That's what it reminds me of. That's the satanic mindset. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. They'd rather have their streets in chaos. They'd rather have children dying and yet be able to say, I'm presiding over it all, than have the president send them some aid that would bring order to their cities and stop the shedding of blood. Folks, if ever there were a time to pray, the time is now. I'll take your calls when we come back.
It's my turn. is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
Then they seized him and led him away, bringing him unto the high priest's house. Peter followed at a distance, and when they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them. After Jesus was arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane, he was carried to the house of Joseph Caiaphas. Caiaphas was the high priest that year, although it was his father-in-law Annas who had the real power. In all probability, the party walked up a flight of steps in the southern part of Jerusalem to reach the house of Caiaphas. Some steps have been excavated which led to the spot where many believe the house of Caiaphas stood. It is possible to walk those very steps today. The Church of St. Peter in Gallicanto, which means cockcrow, is a lovely little church building constructed by the Augustinian fathers on the site where they accept as that of the house of Caiaphas. The church gets its name from the fact that Peter denied he knew Jesus three times in the courtyard before the 3 a.m. hour, the time of the cockcrow. In the life of Jesus, we have some hours between 3 o'clock in the morning and about 6 o'clock in the morning, during which we don't know what happened to him. A visitor to the Church of St. Peter in Gallicanto today will be taken down into the basement to examine a pit carved from the rock. The pit is very small and had only one opening large enough for a person to enter it. The opening is at the top of the pit. The pit was part of the jail located there. Perhaps Jesus, being tried and condemned by an illegal makeshift Sanhedrin meeting in the early hours, was brought to this pit to spend the next few hours. In the 88th Psalm, one can read what could have been the feelings of Jesus if indeed he was lowered into this pit. Peter denied his Lord that night. He did so, I feel, not so much from cowardice as from bewilderment and confusion. He did not know what Jesus expected him to do. Did he not get rebuked by the Lord in the Garden of Gethsemane just a short time before when he fought for the safety and release of Jesus? Certainly Peter was confused as to what course of action to follow. Standing on the balcony of the Church of St. Peter in Gallicanto, you can see where the courtyard was that Peter denied his Lord. And as you gaze in that direction, you aren't quite as fast to point the accusing finger at the big fisherman. You can recall those times when you too denied the Lord by silence or inaction. It is one thing to find fault and blame. It is another thing altogether to take a very deep look into one's own commitment. We aren't nearly as perfect as we sometimes think we are. As you leave this beautiful little church building, you do so thinking that you need to spend more time on the log in your own eye and less on the splinter in your neighbor's eye. Jesus was speaking to each of us when he gave that advice.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
Well, folks, there's so much to talk about. We could hit any number of topics. I've hit a couple for you, and you may be able to bring up some others. You are able to bring up others that you might want to mention. The number is 888-589-8840. I was just thinking about these teams now that are all joining in with kneeling for the national anthem. I mean, have we not learned anything? And I don't know. It's just, you know, well, I tell you what, I will be playing kickball and dodgeball with the kids in my church and doing other things. Because the days of me being a fan of football and basketball and it appears almost any sport in our country are pretty much over. And maybe if all of us take that attitude, maybe they'll finally get the point that you can't spit in the eye of the American people and then expect them to finance your business and help make you rich. But just a thought. Okay, let's go to your calls. Let's see. We've got, let's go to Gene in Kansas. Gene, welcome.
Hi, Bishop. How are you?
I'm doing great, Gene. How are you?
Oh, just fine, man. You tell it like it is. We need somebody to speak truth and don't hold no punches. Thank you.
Well,
for that.
Thank you.
But as you speak about evil and we knowing where all evil originates, then you're familiar with the scripture where Jesus cast out the demon and the man, and the Pharisees accused him of being Beelzebub.
Yep.
And in Matthew, it says, in verse 26 in that passage, it says, and if Satan drives out Satan, he has become divided against himself and disunified. Mm-hmm. How then will his kingdom last or continue to stand? And so we can gather from that passage that the reason of why they are able to do the things that they are doing is that they are unified. They are working together. They're focused on their assignment, their mission, of which is, as you say, straight out of the pit of hell from Satan himself. But there is only one solution, and yet the solution being the body of Christ.
Yes.
Itself is divided. This is why Jesus had to pray, Father, that they be one. We members of the body of Christ must come together, that the power of God, the Spirit of God, living and dwelling in us, might rise up in this hour and allow God to be God, bringing about revival in this nation.
Amen.
And well, I just wanted to share that with you, Bishop.
Well, Gene, listen, you bless me. And if you email me at ewj@standamerica.us, ewj@standamerica.us, I will send you out a gift because your comments bless me today. Thank you so much for the call, Gene. Folks, he just preached, in summary, a sermon that I preached to a group of Hispanic pastors yesterday down in Miami. And I was saying that very thing, that if we as Christians, oh, I could get emotional about this. If we as Christians would put aside all the racial and denominational stuff that the devil has used to divide us, and we would just unite around the Word of God and our faith in the Lordship of Jesus Christ, and would vote our values and say, look, we're not going to have any leaders. We don't care. Forget about the party labels. If you don't stand up for the things of God, I'm not supporting you. I mean, now we know we're not going to find any perfect people, but you've got to at least meet some fundamentals. You've got to be pro-life. You've got to understand what a family is as God ordained it. You've got to support Israel. You've got to support the First Amendment rights of our people. You've got to be someone who believes that there is truth and morality ordained by God, that you don't get to make it up on your own. And you got to be someone who understands that the government has nothing. It has no money. The only money the government has is what you and I work to earn. Let me say that again, folks, because there's so many people who don't seem to understand that. The only government the money has is what you and I work to earn. And say, so, well, wait a minute, Bishop, they can print money. Folks, that's not money. That's paper. And sooner or later, those chickens come home to roost. The only real money it has is what you and I work to earn. That's that stuff it's printing now to pay for all the stuff we're paying for. That's not real. That stuff is not real, folks. And if we don't stop it, if we don't get a handle on this thing, we're going to have more to deal with than people riding in the streets. We're going to be going to the supermarket with a basket full of money to bring home a paper bag of groceries, a small paper bag full of groceries. I mean, so we don't have people, as Christians, don't support people with those kinds of values. You know, the Bible says, oh, no man anything but to love it. We're not supposed to be a nation in the kind of debt we're in. So, sorry about it. You got me started, Gene. I won't preach anymore. Let's go to... But we Christians are the answer. You're right. The body of Christ is the answer. And if we don't vote then we're abdicating, that it's our responsibility for what happens. It's our responsibility anyway. But then if this nation collapses, that's going to be on us. Let's go to Wesley in Georgia. Wesley, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Bishop. That was awesome, Mr. Gene, if you're still listening. Anyway, I just want to bring your attention. I'm sure you know I want to say McCloskey, but I think it's McCloskey, the couple that was defending their private property and their lives and their home, has been charged with unlawful use of a firearm, I think it is, or it's a felony charge. I'm sure you know the charge, you're being an attorney background. But, man, that's just, a man's got a right to protect his family and his life and his property. And that's a real tragedy when you get charged with that for standing right there on your own porch while there's people breaking into your property. That sends a really scary message to criminals, doesn't it, or across this country that they can. Where are the rioters? Why haven't any of them been charged? You know. And just real quick, I love Kayleigh McEnany. She told that reporter, I think it was yesterday, it was New York Times reporter or something, that was just glorifying de Blasio, and she said, well, but de Blasio likes to criticize Trump, and he's criticizing the New York Police Department. I don't see him doing much to help the violence going on in his city. And she just walked off the stage. it was awesome.
Good.
But anyway,
good for
her. I'll let you run with those points, Bishop. Thanks.
Hey, thank you for calling, Wesley. Yeah, that's Mark and Patricia McCloskey, and they've been charged with felony unlawful use of a weapon and misdemeanor charge of fourth-degree assault. I don't know where the assault comes from, but they didn't touch anybody. They didn't do anything. They were protecting their own property, and you're absolutely right. And this is what I mean. We've got to have people in office who are going to defend our fundamental God-given rights. And you got a fundamental God-given right to defend your property. If a mob comes onto my property, I wouldn't do anything different than they did. And the idea that you could be charged and put in jail for defending your life, your wife's life, your property against unlawful and violent encroachment is just goes to show how far off the left is. I said, is it mental illness or is it just pure evil? I think Gene suggested this. It just really is pure evil. And it comes from the devil, that you turn law-abiding citizens into criminals. And you let the criminals who are destroying property and hurting people, they go free. It doesn't make a bit of sense. Let's go to Mac in Georgia. Mac, welcome.
Thank you for taking my call, Bishop. I think the way the virus is, they want to keep everything closed because they think unemployment and all that's going to hurt Trump. And I don't believe that's going to happen. But the voter registration being mailed in, I would believe it's going to be crooked as a letter S. And I pray that they won't have to be able to do that, really. You should be able to show who it is that's voting. And I'll let you take other calls. Thank you.
Well, Mac, what can I say? I agree with you entirely. I think that this thing is being stoked up in order to control a lot of things. To control the people, but you're right. I think the election is one of the things that they're trying to control through trying to exaggerate and create hysteria over the coronavirus and keep the economy from coming back. And these mail-in ballots, that won't work. Back in a moment.
Friendships is offering an amazing opportunity for young adults who want to grow in their walk with God. Learn relief missions, experience the mission field, and become physically fit. Sound like something you've been looking for? Check out Seahawk's one-year scholarship program at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022. That's 337-433-5022. The next session starts August 10th. Mission Outreach, the Middle East.
This is Chris Katulka of the Friends of Israel Today radio program, and I want to encourage you to join us this weekend. We're going to be continuing our Encountering Jesus series. We're going to be looking at the life of Jesus as he ministered one-on-one to individuals. And this week, it's the woman at the well. We're going to see the power of Christ's forgiveness, his reconciliation, how he invites us to worship in spirit and in truth. You can listen on this station or connect with us at foiradio.org.
If you've fallen behind in your credit card payments during the shutdown, you're probably feeling some added pressures. And even a brief history of late payments can lead to a big drop in your credit score. But you don't have to solve these problems alone. Trinity Debt Management can help. We'll work with your creditors, put a stop to late fees and other penalties, and make a plan that helps you get caught up. We'll also consolidate your bills into one easy-to-manage monthly payment and negotiate much lower interest rates. Not only will you find immediate relief, you'll save thousands. And don't worry, it's not a loan. It's a smart way to get back on track. All you have to do is give Trinity a quick call, and we'll take care of the rest. Right now, no one really knows what the future will bring, but one thing is for sure. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Here's the number.
Call 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
Learning to fail is very important, and learning to get back up.
Sheila Irwin, mom to the filmmaking duo The Irwin Brothers, on Focus on the Family Minute.
Failure's not the end. Failure's a learning process. Hank was so good with the boys about saying, what'd you learn?
Yeah.
Tell me what you learned, son. And so teaching them to learn from their mistakes, to get up, to get back up and get back in the fight, you know, and figure out what they're going to have to do. And I know Andy did a podcast that was on during the quarantine. He was talking about that, yes, was it a gut punch when your new movie came out and it was number one in the nation? I still believe was number one on Friday night, and on Monday morning they closed all the theaters down.
Yeah, the timing.
And it was a gut punch. And what do you do? Do you just sit there and wallow in your pain, or do you say, okay, now what can we do now?
More from Sheila at FamilyMinute.org.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
And by the way, folks, that couple that's charged, that McCloskey couple, they were charged by a prosecutor who's received over $70,000 from George Soros. So that tells you all you need to know. George Soros is running around the country buying up prosecutors, basically. And people want to talk about slavery. What about George Soros trying to basically create a bunch of slave prosecutors who will do his bidding? And she's basically been releasing everybody involved in property destruction, everybody involved in violent protests. They get a pass. But a couple that simply seeks to defend their property, oh, they're charged. And by the way, it's been proven now that the woman was not holding a gun. She was holding a movie prop. It was a bluff. Her husband had an AR-15. That was not a bluff. But she didn't have anything. She was just basically trying to... They were using some bravado. They didn't have any intention of hurting anybody, but they had every intention of defending themselves against any attempt to hurt them. And they were right to do so. Okay, well, I think we've got a call that has some things to say about President Donald Trump and in terms of disagreeing with him and some of the things he said. So let's, in the interest of the First Amendment, which we honor on this program and on this network, let's go right to Ben in Texas. Ben, welcome. Do we have you right? Are you interested? You got some things about President Trump you want to bring up that you don't like?
Well, no, it's not necessarily him. It's the enablers that I have a problem with.
Oh, okay.
What I mean by that is I hear talk show host and everyone else speak about calling out everyone else for the dishonesty and being evil and the whole nine yards. And then I listen to you sometimes, and I agree with you sometimes, but sometimes it seems as though when things are wrong for him to tweet out, nobody wants to call him out on it. And then as a matter of fact, It's been nerve-wracking. Make a long story short, you know, right before he was elected, everybody was always talking about now what Donald Trump meant to say or what he was trying to say, and then that has been going on now since the whole time he was ran for.
Okay. Well, look.
Doing the same thing.
Look, Ben, obviously, because we have limited time, I want to give you a chance to really express yourself. So let me, I want to ask a question, and then I want to make a comment. Do you have any particular thing that he's tweeted out or said that you thought was particularly egregious that somebody like me, for example, should call him out on?
Pretty much as when he was talking about the rioters and all that stuff, and the take of the knee, and then let me narrow down this right here. Taking a knee. Everybody understood take of the knee in the beginning was about trying to bring light to racial injustice.
I didn't.
But once it was known that after Donald Trump took hold to it and said because they don't love that country, they hate the flag and all this other stuff, everybody have latched on to that. And then that's what everybody's
okay. Well, Ben, let me respond to that. Before Donald Trump ever said anything about it, I detested it. I thought it was despicable. I hated it because here was my point. You want to protest police brutality, which, of course, you have a right to do, which is only a very, very small percentage. Small. I mean, an infinitesimal percentage of the number of black folks who die from violence in this country. They die as a result of unlawful activity by police. Now, many die because they're engaged in police shootouts and they're doing things they've got no business doing, putting themselves and police and innocent people in danger. But let's say there's a small number of people who die unlawfully and unjustly at the hands of police. Okay, fine. You want to protest that? No problem. Why do you need to kneel for the flag? What does the flag have to do with that? What does the entire country have to do with that? What you're saying is you don't like America. And I interpreted it that way from the very beginning. And then when Colin Kaepernick came out and said, I will not celebrate your white supremacist holiday, July 4th, as far as I'm concerned, that sealed the deal. I knew I was right all along, because if you want to protest police brutality, you find a way to call attention to that. You don't denigrate the flag that people have served under and fought under and stood for and that represents the freedom and opportunity that this nation represents, and then claim, well, this is about police brutality and it's about racial injustice. I just don't buy it. I never did buy it. Now, the president called them SOBs. I would not have done that. And I made clear I would not have done that. But I don't think he was being racial because, you know, a lot of the people kneeling are not black anyway, even though it's about a black issue. I think he was expressing his anger that people would denigrate our country that way. And that's the way I interpreted it. So there was nothing for me to call the president out on. In general, I've said many times, I would not say some of the things the president says the way he says them. But we've got to look at what the president does. Because this is a man of action, and it's his actions that ought to be the basis upon which we judge his presidency. Because in terms of he's a New York construction guy, and the way he talks is not the way I talk. It's probably not the way you talk, probably not the way a lot of Americans might talk. But what is he doing? What has he done for the black community? He's done tremendous things. I mean, this is the first president to make permanent support for the historically black colleges and universities. Every year, that's been a bone of contention. This president has now solidified that funding. He thought that was important. He did it. He is the one who led the way toward, criminal justice reform, even though I didn't agree with every policy that was put forth in the Criminal Justice Reform Act. But nevertheless, he worked with Senator Tim Scott in doing that. This president established opportunity zones to try to bring economic activity into the inner cities of our country. This president is trying to defend the lives of black people by creating law and order, because law-abiding citizens are the victims in this stuff. There's not everybody doing this. So it's what he does, not just what he says, but what he does that ought to matter most. And people I know who know the president who are black tell me there's not a racist bone in that man's body. Not one. But he's a guy who just says whatever he thinks about things, and he says what he thinks, and you know, people can think of that what they will. But what he does is what matters. That's what a president's real legacy is all about. And frankly, in terms of his policies, for the most part, I am just in full agreement with the policies that the man has put forward. So I hope that helps answer your question. Sorry, folks, for keeping you waiting while I try to deal with that. Let's deal with Let's go to Bob of Ohio. Bob, welcome. Bob, are you there?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
All right, Bob, you're on.
God bless you. Listen, this thing about voter fraud, what they ought to do is have a picture. That's all I got to say.
Okay. All right, Bob, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go to Gary in Texas. Gary, welcome. Gary, are you there?
Yes, I am.
There you go.
Yes, sir.
You're on, Gary. Go right in.
I'm just tired of all this racist lie. My family's a rainbow, brother. We have Black, Filipino, Korean, everything. None of us are racist. It's the media pushing this narrative for the Confederate Democrats, which are the ones that actually created slavery. They created the KKK to keep the blacks in line, and then they started the Civil War because they didn't want to give up their slaves. But yet they point the fingers at Republicans that actually freed the slaves. Okay? It's just... And for these other people out there say they don't like the way the president talks, don't live in glass houses. And if you're without sin, don't cast the first stone. Okay? We all say stuff. And I love that man. I like how he talks. I'm old school. We tell it how it is. Okay? And I know he doesn't mean it intentionally. Yeah, he slips up. But he's telling you the truth. And he is a businessman. And I like the way he's doing the economy. Everything this man has done, he's done more than five presidents combined in 3 years. You might not like the way he does it, but he's getting results. But when you have all these finger pointers blaming you for this, I mean, every day, it's like this man has no breath since he started.
Right.
I mean, it reminds me sort of like Jesus time when everybody condemned him. He's this. He's a liar. He's not this. This man is going through the same persecution.
Well, Gary, listen, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. We're almost out of time, but you look, you are right. I think one of the appeals of this president is that he's not a politician. He does not measure every word. Therefore, he does not always say things in the precise, measured way that politicians like to talk, you know, measuring and dicing and like Barack Obama talked. I mean, it would take Barack Obama 5 minutes to get a sentence out. The way in which we consider whether we're going to, and by the time the man finished a sentence or a paragraph, you don't know what he started talking about. This president is very different, and I think that's part of his appeal. I think people are just, and I don't mean to pick on Barack Obama, because I think a lot of politicians are guilty of this. On both sides of the aisle, by the way. And this president is just different. I always say, look, this guy grew up on the construction sites of New York. That's where he grew up. You can imagine some of the stuff he heard and the way people talked. And I think that's his background. Not some politician running around trying to figure out what does he need to say in order to make everybody happy and make people like him. So that's just who this president is. And that's why I say, it's what he's doing. It's what he's doing that ultimately is the measure of his presidency. And the left always is going to jump on what he has to say because they can always find something. They'll dice his words and pick out something that because they do that with all conservatives. But of course, he's the top conservative in the country. So, of course, they do it to him the most. But you know what? Thank God for his strength and pray for his continued strength. And in the meantime, folks, thank you all for praying for us. Thank you for joining in. I love to hear calls from people who don't agree with me or don't agree with the president or don't agree with conservatism. It's fun. I want to talk to you. So feel free to call anytime. And in the meantime, all of you, remember, we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.